Vem magalenha rojão, traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer armação. Hoje é um dia de sol, alegria de coió, é curtir o verão.
Vem magalenha rojão, traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer armação. Hoje é um dia de sol, alegria de coió, é curtir o verão.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Traz a senha pro fogão, TT decoração. Hoje é um dia de sol, alegria de xotó, meu TT de verão.
Vem, magalenha rojão, traz a senha pro fogão, TT decoração. Hoje é um dia de sol, alegria de xotó, meu TT de verão.
Oh. Wow, I saw your hips moving. I couldn't believe that was you. That is, of course, my favorite from Brazil, Sergio Mendes, with Carlinhos Brown, who was singing. The name of the tune is Magalena, and the album is from 1992, Brasileiro. It was an international award winner. I love this music. It's just pure percussion and vocals, and that's good enough when it comes from Brazil. That's all you need. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and just to bring you up to snuff on what has been going on, we are learning today. Only yesterday I reported there was one known fatality in the storm that hit Michael, the hurricane that hit Florida and parts of Georgia and Virginia. And today, that number has been upped to 12, with more fatalities expected. And I couldn't help but think, and it may be a little crass to think about it this way at this time, from one yesterday to 12 today, with the expectation of more deaths as a result of the storm, that the president could not understand how it was that the death toll in Puerto Rico just skyrocketed, because it's the nature of storms like this, with such ferocious winds that blow things all over the place and cover people up and triggers storm surges, that people get buried under them, and they're discovered sometimes days and weeks and even months after the storm has gone and the reclamation process begins. So that's where it stands now. And it's never a good thing, of course. You don't want people to die. But still, we have to remember that a lot of work was done to warn people to evacuate areas where the storm surge was expected to be very, very high. And I think it is because of the effort to warn the people and their own experiences with storms of this nature, but this was a particularly vicious one. And but with the pre-warnings, it helped to alleviate the issue of a massive death toll. But the bouncing back will take some time, because there was extensive damage, really bad damage, in all three states. So it will take some time to coordinate the rebuilding effort there. Well, let's continue our conversation, whatever it is today. Of course, it's Free Your Mind Friday, and the whole idea is for you to speak about whatever it is you want to talk about. And we don't have scripts here. You're not pre-screened. We don't do that. We trust that you have something important to share with us, and we give you the space in which to do that. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. One last thing I want to say is I thank those of you, because I get some heads ups from time to time, that people are still donating, and that's great. Thank you so much for supporting PRN. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, pardon, my cord is a little tangled up, oh boy. So it's just going to take me a minute to get on the phone here. Greetings to the beloved family, for sure.
Thank you.
I have several thoughts. I'm not going to be able to get it all in, but I just listened to the first half hour of your Thursday program, which I missed live. And you, Therese, you were so on target in terms of the obsessiveness, the essentially fascism and Nazism. So those are going to be a lot of my comments. As to the obsessiveness, I heard Frank Schaefer on one of the cable stations, who was the son of a famous evangelicalist, white evangelical faith, right, and a strong activist, and he sort of, you know, was put by his father's side and saw all that went on, and he addressed himself to the obsessiveness in terms of essentially fourth birth. And this fourth birth, because we saw Kavanaugh around a minor who I understand was raped on her trek to the U.S., who he was the only descent. So I think that's an important aspect. He says he just can't understand the obsessiveness, but we do, because that's the branch of white supremacy that I believe the first caller and the second caller yesterday was talking about. Now, I also want to clarify a conversation, I think, the day before that I didn't get in. And I think we have to be clear that, now I agree that the heads of the Democrats, when they chose Clinton, they didn't see that people don't want a dynasty, whether it's Bush or the Clintons, and they didn't go with someone who could have taken on Trump on a more equal basis, and that is Bernie Sanders. But I must say, and I notice that some of the callers that day disagree with me, that we are where we are. And I must say, and I'm so pleased that you played, because I saw somebody on the Senate speakings, but I had missed Whitehead. And we have to make a distinction that the Democrats stood up to the process, to a right process. The fact that Kavanaugh was able to denigrate them, to act like he was as unhinged as Trump. In fact, he was doing the Trump talking points, Clinton revenge at Al. So we must say Kamala Harris is astounding. She asked him, she said, is there any law or statute that deals or regulates men's body? And of course he had to say no, but the rest of the questions weren't answered. And you described it so perfectly yesterday, because the Republicans, how would you put someone on the court who, just asked Amy Klobuchar, instead of saying whether he blacked out, and we're still waiting for an answer to that question that the FBI could have provided us, he asked her whether she blacked out after she shared her own story around her alcoholic father still struggling. So you're absolutely right. I also want to point out that one of the callers thought I was talking about Roe v. Wade on a particular call. No, I was talking about the unitary executive, where Kavanaugh has actually stated that he looks to have a president like a Trump with absolute power, no checks and balances, and impunity in terms of both civil and criminal matters. Now, I think we have to have a certain amount of study because we are where we are. We absolutely need a system where big money, such as the Citizens United situation and others, came into play. But in the meantime, I think the Democrats, to me, I was just so pleased in terms of Harris, Whitehead, Leahy, Durbin. They were actually using a correct process, and they had the high ground. Now, I want to share.
We have to kind of tighten it up. We have other people waiting.
One last point. Rachel Maddow reported that there are numerous complaints against Kavanaugh as he sat on the D.C. circuit, and the numerous.
Hello?
Watching that closely, and thank you so much. Next time I'll share even more. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Matt, for your call today. 888-874-4888. It's a free forum where you express whatever it is you want to talk about. The floor is yours. Jason from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hello, Leatrice. It's been a while since I talked to you in a while.
Thank you.
Glad you're in good health. And yes, and then welcome to, I will say hello to the audience.
Thank you.
I would like to, you're welcome. I don't know if anyone has analyzed or done any critical analysis of why there's so much resistance to common sense healing and why there's so much resistance to common sense progressive thoughts that we are really forced to entertain on the conservative. We are forced to entertain their resistance towards progressive issues, vis-a-vis a livable wage, or what former Governor Jesse Ventura says would recommend a maximum wage. There's something to be some jewels and gems and that we can pick from why the 61 million voted for Donald Trump and why they feel, why do we neglect to understand what motivates them to have, not their opinions, not their perspective, not their ideology, but why they simply resist in common sense solutions. There's a man named, I think his name was Donald Channel, Mr. Channel, who spoke about Harold. His name is Harold Channel here in New York. He spoke about that our society or the Western world in general, including the United States, has transcended scarcity, meaning the basic bottom level of means of living, food, shelter, housing, education, are easily able to be distributed and provided. However, there is a resistance, the same resistance that the neoconservatives have, some liberals perhaps, who have the mindset of greed and don't understand that there should be, in the 21st century, almost on the quarter mark of the 21st century, we're still having issues of transcending scarcity. And I think that's something that we may want to entertain or try to dissect of why.
But let me ask you: is this new? Is this hypothesis new?
I think it is new. The hypothesis of analyzing why there's so much resistance from a very antiquated relic of a mentality that we have. 61 million people voiced their opinion. Perhaps not all 61 million or 60 million voiced their opinion for opposing party. Have this antiquated view of me, and very self-oriented that they don't.
But don't we have ample evidence in the United States that this could be said to be a quintessentially American mindset?
Yes,
look at the wars that we have
mindset,
had, the civil wars and all the different kinds of wars, intrastate, interstate, and national wars. We've had all kinds of indications about a mindset that you're now talking about. So the question isn't so much, why do people resist common sense? I mean, it should have been common sense not to have slavery, especially
correct,
being initiated by religious people, a Christian society built on slavery and murder and atrocities and wholesale
right,
massacres
was,
of people. Now, that would seem to me to be a clearly logical thing to not do, but this is the mindset. We've been dealing with this kind of stuff, this mentality, since the days of the so-called forefathers of this country.
That's true. It's a certain amount of commingling where it's couched in the language of atrocities and slavery, but it's based on a greed of a free market system, of a mercantile system, where one of the first cargoes to come over to for profit to the new for North America was human bondage, human slavery, even indentured servitude. In fact, 1676 was a benchmark for freedom with the Bacon's Rebellion in Virginia, where Bacon successfully for one full year, stopped the land barons prior to even the founding of this country, where the argument can be said, based on the whole history, what you just spoke about, of the legacy, the historical evidence of atrocities, victimization, intent to poison, intent to kill, intent to criminalize, and have a two-tier or three-tier judicial system, one can claim that they have no credibility anymore. There's, like you keep saying, sometimes you repeatedly say these words, that there is no credibility in both parties at this time, to the point where it should, but it doesn't, motivate people to stop chasing private commercial paper, stop chasing a job and a dollar bill, and give pause, because the Bacon Rebellion of 1676 was a paramount or a benchmark where it successfully for 1 year stopped the land barons and the so-called elite of that time to start and create this whole issue of whiteness, of the issue of what is white, what does white mean, and the privileges of being white.
Well, the Bacon Rebellion was an intra-racial fight, as I see it. One group of whites who were very well off, very powerful, protecting their assets and their spoils from the marauding whites, the low-class whites, the whites they would never even want to acknowledge as being in the same racial group. But that was class-based. But when you looked at other rebellions, like the rebellion of Nat Turner, or even of John Brown, you see that the whites congealed, even though they had differences of opinion about who should have power and who should not. They were in absolute agreement that Africans and indigenous people should be obliterated from the earth. They agreed on that. Here in modern times, we have a, quote, white president, and we have to really refine that definition, because although he is white, he's alienating many whites. They don't recognize him as extolling the virtues of whiteness. And then there are people who think that he is the right kind of white person because he is protecting their interests by, you know, limiting other people's rights and privileges and coming down hard on the poor and those who are struggling in the middle class and the working class. So there's an interesting dynamic among whites who even who support Trump. They don't like the kind of whiteness he is supporting. And the question is, where will they fit in the ensuing or the coming blowout that I expect that the country will experience in short order?
I
and principally,
think that
it would have to do with the differences, the social, political, and economic differences within white America. Where do they place their interests? And to what degree are they compelled to protect them?
Well, thank you for that. Yes, they certainly are exposing themselves, where Trump is exposing a certain demographic that their MO is to oppress others through the political means. And that seems to be the underlining agenda, is to have a political engine or political party with the express interest of shutting down, oppressing not only people of color, but their own gender, their own counterpart, women, white women. And now it's being exposed for what it truly is. And that perhaps is perhaps an epiphany to those who've never seen it before.
I think you're right. And we'll have to monitor very closely how white America is dealing with this dilemma. Where are they placing themselves in this fight? So thank you very much, Jason, for your contribution today. Very thoughtful. I appreciate it. Harvey from Berkeley, how are you doing?
Hello, wonderful Latrice. I'm doing great. Well, on October the 12th, a branch of the UN called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a dire warning with a headline that said, "We have 12 years to limit our climate change, the climate change catastrophe." And I'm feeling that we need to reframe the threat, this threatening situation, to get a clearer picture of what's happening to Mother Earth. And simply put, we have to see it as a medical problem. We've made Mother Earth sick, and she's running a fever called global heating. And we know that when we get sick and our temperature goes up by a few degrees, say even to 105, it could kill us. And we have to reduce and stabilize our body temperature. So we have to reduce and stabilize Mother Earth's fever and her planetary temperature. And we know that her illness is being caused by our over-the-top use of fossil fuels like coal, oil, methane, and radioactive materials like uranium. And the cure is divesting from these fossil fuels and reinvesting in renewable energy production to help bring Mother Earth's fever down. And some of the personal things we can do to heal our mother is eat more GMO, non-GMO organic foods, so there's less need for petroleum-based fertilizers, pesticides, fungicides, and fumicides, which are made from petroleum. Eat less meat, which means less methane released into our atmosphere, as well as less need to clear-cut the forests of the world, which for grazing cattle, which are the lungs of the world. And stop using disposable plastic and styrofoam products, and carry a mess kit or a lunchbox or a utensil-carrying tote bag containing reusable stainless steel or glass food and food containers and utensils. And so when we make Mother Earth sick, we get sick too. So let's work to reduce her fever and help her recover and feel well again, because Earth is Mama.
Great, great suggestions. How do you react to the U.S. reaction to the U.N. report?
Say that again. How do I react? Did you, is that what you said?
Yes. What is your reaction to the United States reaction to the U.N. report on climate?
Well, it's change or die, simply put. I mean, all of Mother's creatures. If the temperature goes up, we'll be facing what they call a runaway greenhouse effect, which is what happened on the planet Venus. The temperature got so high because of the carbon dioxide, which captures the sun's rays and turns it into heat. It got so high that the surface temperature is now about 600 degrees. The scientists say they think there were oceans on Venus. The oceans boiled off. It's basically pretty much a dead planet. And I say, where's the profit? Where's the profit in a dead planet, you know?
So well, I was referring to the fact that although they basically forecast that the next 12 years would be critical, the Trump administration kind of poo-pooed it, you know, just pushed it aside. It didn't get very much excited about it. And any thoughts about such a dire prediction being met with such indifference?
Yes, well, the Trump administration, as I've said in the past, is a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry, and it's the fossil fuel industry's last stand to regain their markets. But it won't happen. We have to make the switch. And, you know, even it's so silly, especially for Trump, because a lot of his properties are they're right on the coast. And, you know, like you just had your hurricane down there, which wiped out a whole little town there. I saw the pictures. It was devastating. Well, what about all his hotels that are on the ocean and his home, Key Largo there? That could be wiped
Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago. So, you know, even his own properties are going to be wiped out by this very thing that he's supporting. It's sick and twisted. I don't trust the man. It's like a bad movie. It's like we're in a horror movie now, and Trump's the leading character. And so we have to really get past him. And I call on everyone to petition their politicians personally. Go to town hall meetings, start at the bottom. You know, New York divested from fossil fuels. They divested their retirement funds from fossil fuels. I say go to your towns, speak to your counselors there. Tell them that you want them to divest any stocks or bonds that they're holding in fossil fuel industry and reinvest in renewable energy. I mean, we can do a lot, and we have the power. It's change or die. And as I said, Earth is mama, so we got to love our mother.
Thanks, Harvey. Good to hear from you, as usual. From New Jersey, Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Okay, Jeff, how are you?
Yeah. I'm all right. Happy to follow Harvey there. That's my man out there on the West Coast. I love that guy. You know, I don't know him, but I love him. And just to echo what he said, you know, they gave us 12 years. The IPCC gave 12 years as a prediction that, you know, we don't change, we're going to hell in a handbasket. But it's actually short. Those are very, very conservative figures. Those are the figures that the government wants to use so people don't go into a panic. Well, I'm telling you now, folks, this is one of the things I say about going back to church to help do things in your community. Love is what we need. And what Harvey's talking about, healing the earth, it's about healing with love. It's about doing things with love. If you love the earth, you won't pollute it. You won't kill it. If you love your neighbors, you won't kill them. You won't steal from them. You won't harm them. You'll help them. And this is what we need about love. This is what we talk about going to church, creating communities, so that when crisis does hit, it's not a me. It's not, you know, I'm going for mine. I got to get mine. It's we need to do something to survive together. If we don't band together, if we don't come together in love, we will not survive. We will not survive the migration that's going to happen from climate change. We will not survive the temperatures, the shortness of resources that's going to occur. There's a lot of things that are going on. And, you know, New York took it a step further, not just to divest. It's not about just divesting. We have to go a step further. New York is actually suing the fossil fuel industries because of what they're going to have to do to prepare for the extra 9 feet of water that they're going to get on their coastline. So they're going to have to build things and restructure things that are going to have to, you know, to combat it, you know, build walls and so on and so forth. So they're suing. And that should be up and down. If you're on a coastal city, encourage your encourage your administrators, your mayors, and everything else to turn around and sue the fossil fuel industry. I predict that the fossil fuel industry will come out with an alternative thing to gas or to petroleum that they're already kind of pushing with Exxon. But they need to, that they know that you're not going to collect money on the petroleum and now turn around collect money on the solution, that the problem that you call, because all these cities, Miami's underwater. You know, these cities getting hit by hurricanes, and in Maryland, you know, the was flooded. All those cities need to turn around and sue.
I'm glad you mentioned Miami. I just want to accentuate your point. Miami is, it's already been predicted it will vanish with the next major storm. It would, because it keeps sinking, and the retainer walls that they built aren't working. They're not feasible, not for the kind of the prediction that they're making about the storm surge that Miami would have to deal with, not only in terms of when this any actual storm hits, but the prediction is that this is going to be not a temporary condition, but a permanent condition. The same with Lower Manhattan. The prediction is it would be underwater permanently. A huge chunk of Lower Manhattan will be underwater. And the attenuation methods that they have will simply not work. We saw this happen recently in that storm in Texas, where the systems that they thought would work and hold off the water just did not work. There was a lot more water than they expected to contend with.
Yeah, well, they also in Houston, and this past storm that just hit, actually the last two storms that hit Florida, North Carolina, and Houston, I urge people to go to the National Weather Service and look at the Doppler radar images, and you can see where the difference between what looks like to be land-based fronts and what are actually natural kind of base fronts. So when the hurricane hit in Houston, I noticed that there was a wall of what looked like water coming from the ground, not from clouds, but water coming from the ground that kind of trapped the storm over Houston. The same thing in the panhandle here in Florida. Looked like something was there to kind of trap it indefinitely in North and South Carolina. You know, one of the red flags that went up for me was when they said it's going to cost billions and billions of dollars to redo, and the storm hadn't hit land yet. And then they turned around and it was reduced to a Category 1. They said, oh, well, the storm is going to stop here. Well, how do you know it's going to stop there? It's the same thing with Sandy. Sandy made a 45-degree turn. You know, and it hit New York, New Jersey. So it's, you know, we have to be careful of these or very cognizant of these things that are going on. But that's regardless of the climate change that is actually happening on the planet. All those, listen, one of the things in that Jesus says to do, and is in the Book of Thomas, is to pray. Pray so much that it becomes a thought, and that you're no longer praying. We need to do the prayer, and we need to heal. And when we pray, prayer moves things. Vibration moves things. The sound of your voice moves things. They did that with the Japanese gentleman, I believe, did an experiment with water, and it's called the memory of water. Yell at water, he flash froze it, and it produced a certain thing. And I say that because we when he prayed over water that was actually kind of poisoned, the water cleared up. So that's very real. So we can do this, and when Harvey's talking about healing the planet, that's the other phase of healing the planet. Going outside, take your shoes off, put your hands on a tree, step in the grass, and send it good vibrations and good love. That's where, you know, I said Jesus is going to come through us all. He's not going to show up. He's going to show up in a group of people. He's going to show up in enough people that's going to change the planet. Right? Not everybody's going to get there. But there's going to be enough of us, I think, that's going to wake up.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for your contribution today. Thanks for calling in. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hi, greetings.
Hello.
Utrice, greetings, Utrice. I want to say I find joy in your recovery, and I pray it continues.
Thank you. I really appreciate that you take some time out of your busy, busy schedule and your busy day to send your good thoughts my way.
I'm not too busy to be grateful for you being in the world and pointing to the right direction for us and allowing
Thank
us
you.
To express ourselves. I'm going to jump, I'm going to touch a couple of points, Utrice. I wake up, and I'm going to try to talk slowly and measured because I might just start, you know, ranting. I wake up wishing the fossil fuel paradigm was just a horrible nightmare. It is fueled by what I call hatism. That's my word for fascism. Fascism is a silly word. It's spelled stupidly, and it just describes hatism. And as you already know, hate is fear, and fear is lack of faith. Now, centuries ago, scientists split water. It's really quite simple. Since then, billions of dollars and a lot of effort have been spent to try to cover up the solution to all our problems. The scientists didn't know what to do with the hydrogen gas they produced by simply splitting water with electrolysis. All of our vehicles, land, sea, and air, could have been running off hydrogen, splitting water. I'm referring specifically to what's called HHO, dry cell. Now, if you think I'm rambling, Toyota sells a $58,000 car that runs on liquid hydrogen. The technology's there. But they're trying to corner the market. They're trying to keep it from being available to us. And I'll get right to the point. The technology is here, for example, to run your car, diesel or gas, on hydrogen that is split under the hood. You see, you don't have to buy a car from Toyota or wait for them to build a gas station in Hartford. Right now there's one in Wallingford and there's another one elsewhere. If you buy more of their hydrogen, liquid hydrogen cars, they'll build liquid fueling stations. We don't need them. And that's the biggest secret. Small generator can split the water under your hood on demand, thimbles full of water on demand. So if I haven't made my point by now, it's the biggest cover-up in history besides, of course, cold fusion. So Toyota's demonstrating to me that the technology is there, but they don't want me to be independent of them. So what's the implications? Here's my final question. What are the implications, Utrice, of free energy? I mean, like 99.99999% free energy. I'm referring to hydrogen.
Well, let me pose this question to you. Let's say that this is an efficient method of energy and cheap and available. But what does that do now to the supply of water? Water then becomes a commodity that people will fight over. And it may be reduced where normally it would be available to everybody. So, thinking ahead, let's say that the scenario that you just described is doable, it is effective, cost-effective, it would reduce all kinds of evil emissions into the air and so forth. All this is fine. But then water becomes a strategic resource, and we will have the cycle beginning all over again, do you think? Where water, people will now start fighting over water, and water will become the highest commodity.
How can you defend a commodity like water, like the ocean? How can you, you know what I'm saying, desalinization using hydrogen power? If you need more models than the Toyota hydrogen-powered car, look to Norway, where they decentralized...
People are saying that the water supply is itself dwindling. So we are in trouble with water supply.
It's the ocean. It's infinite. It's practically, virtually infinite. You use hydrogen power to desalinate the water. You've got all the water in the world. And I want to repeat, the sun burns hydrogen. It's the most abundant element in the universe. The implications of free energy are truly revolutionary. And that's why. So you're burning oil, you're burning gas in your car and diesel. 70% of it goes out of your tailpipe. Hydrogen technology allows for 100% efficiency and 0% emissions. Potable water, water vapor, is the emissions from high burning hydrogen in your motor.
What do you see?
So, you know, it's just.
I mean, you've presented a cogent argument here, but do you see any downsides to this in terms of what I just am hinting at, the emergence of power structures that, you know, they take charge of the supply of water. Even if you think it is infinite, there would be wars over water. There would be who has a right to control water, the price of water. How do you distinguish industrial water, quote-unquote, from private use water? I mean, are you expecting any of these issues to come up?
They never will. The powers that be will not let this happen. It's the answer to all of our problems. I mean the environment. I mean, the money system. So, you know, attached to this idea of free energy is that everything else is free. Housing. The implications are too far-reaching for the powers that be to even let it get a start. So I just want to put that bug in people's ear that hydrogen is here. Start researching.
Okay.
HHO, dry cell. There would be no fight over water because we'd have the ocean. All the oceans would be available to us. Well, desalinization is very expensive. Not with free energy. The answer is
definitely worth considering. It's definitely worth considering. And
I want people to wake up to it.
Please keep us up to date on, you know, any kind of developments in this area. Thanks so much for your call,
yes.
Moki. Peter from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice, this is Peter.
Hello, Peter.
I've had a electric car for 3.5 years now, and I didn't go whole hog into electric because living out in the boonies, it's kind of, if you're traveling, hard to find the electric charge stations. But so I went with a Chevy Volt, and there are some dealerships that they like to sell in volume, and so they'll actually give people a good deal, and then they presumably get awarded by Chevrolet for selling in volume. So this new one I have is will go a bit over 50 miles on electric, but I have, I think I've got an average of 140 miles per gallon on the Chevy Volt, even though at one point I had to drive over to New Haven, Connecticut. And so there's the advantage of having the gas backup. You don't have to start searching for an electric charge station along the way. But I think this is one... one among many things that the government, both state and federal, should be doing, putting in electric charge stations and making them available for free for people who live in cities and have access to public transportation. That's terrific, assuming it's running as it should. But for those living out in the boonies in the suburbs, if they are dependent on cars, they should most definitely look seriously into electric cars. And an additional point, the federal government and the state government should be putting huge amounts of subsidy into enabling people to upgrade their houses, making them much more energy efficient, and their commercial businesses, because 30 to 40% of our energy is expended or wasted on heating or air conditioning our buildings, and this whole process could be finessed if governments were willing to cough up the money to help people totally renovate to get their houses up to actually passive house standards. So for upstate New York, R values that are needed for passive house are like R40 in the walls and R60 to 70 in the roof and R20 in the floor. There's just so much that our governments could be doing, but for those who have the money where they can afford to upgrade their houses, they most definitely should be doing that to make them far more energy efficient. That would help us all out in producing less CO2, fewer greenhouse gases. They should also try to transition over to electric cooking, for instance. These induction stoves are incredibly efficient. I went out and spent the extra money when my old gas stove broke down, and the stove is terrific to work with. It's so much better than the gas. I didn't realize that for years I've been slowly gassing myself into sickness during the winter, you know, from gas leakage in the house.
Oh, so, wow.
People should keep that in mind. Gas, oil and gas, they're hazardous materials. They should do everything they can to transition over to electric, get rid of these hazardous materials in their living and working spaces.
Let me ask you a question about your decision to purchase a Chevy Volt.
Yes.
At one point, you know, it was kind of, at least this was what was happening, it was the subject of a great deal of derision that the Chevy Volt, you know, what's the point of it? As an owner of a Chevy Volt, you obviously came to a conscious choice that this is where you're going to go because of your consciousness about the environment and so forth. What did you give up as in making that choice from a gas-run car to an electric car? Well, actually, it has a gas backup as well.
Right. But I don't think I gave up anything. It's just been a joy to drive these things. The first Volt I had, it felt like a submarine inside, and when I was driving it, it was, you know, running quiet, silently, and so that was a weird and special experience. And it's pretty terrific to be able to drive down the road and not have to listen to an engine. It's kind of a little bit a touch of luxury. So, like riding in a Rolls Royce or some car where they've expended a lot of extra money to make the car as silent as possible. Not that I've ever ridden in one, but I assume that that's the way they're part of that
it
experience.
Is. It is very quiet, very, yeah. Very quiet.
Yeah. So they're a joy. And I just wish I had a car that had more electric range. And as I say, the only reason I bought the hybrid is so that I could be assured of not getting stuck or slowed down or marooned on the rare occasions where I have to drive long distances. But there are other electric cars that are much longer range cars, and the Chevy Bolt is not much more expensive than the Volt, and that has a theoretical range of 239 miles just on electric. So, you know, that can get most people as far as they want to go on one trip and reduce their anxiety of being depleted electrically along the way. So, it's just been a joy. I really like these electric cars. And when on an annual basis, a lot of locales will put on these electric drive fairs, and they happen in September. And if you go to them, people are quite often able to get free rides in Teslas, and Teslas are a real trip.
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because yes. I was going to ask you, what is your interpretation of the obstacles that Tesla is experiencing in marketing his electric vehicles? What do you think is happening there?
I think they're doing very well as far as selling. They still got more customers than they've got a backup on their orders. That's the last I heard. And it's when people put their orders in, there's a lengthy waiting time before they can get them fulfilled, get their cars in hand. But their promise of this Model 3 being a $35,000 car, their promise has not come to fruition. They're basically selling a $55,000 car because their prospective customers talk to them and they start selling them on the options. So, and there, of course, there are lots of very desirable options for those who can afford to buy the car. But Tesla is far ahead of the other electric car manufacturers so far, in that they built their infrastructure out there. And this is what the government should be doing, or at the very least that the other car manufacturers should expend money to put that infrastructure out there. So these Tesla drivers, they can be pretty well assured they can find a electric charge somewhere along a long, long trip. They quite often cite their recharge stations along highways. So they're a pretty terrific car. One of the Tesla's problems has been Elon Musk. He has a big mouth. He's very talented at getting himself into trouble by saying
smoking pot at board meetings.
Yeah, I know. He's so good at that. But, I mean, on the positive side, he's good at attracting attention, and that actually raises the desirability and the cachet for a lot of people. A lot of people become much more conscious of Tesla's existence because of Elon Musk.
Hmm.
I think the car company is going to lose something by the SEC forcing Elon Musk to resign as their CEO. He's a little bit crazy. There's no doubt about that. A little bit eccentric. But he's a genius, and he's very productive, and he's produced these cars are just phenomenally quality. I mean, you can just feel it, you know, when you get in the car, when you're riding around, when the enthusiastic driver is demonstrating all these different features that the car has. They're just phenomenal. So anyway, I think that's a great future for anybody who has to have a car. They should seriously look into buying an electric car, either hybrid or full-blown electric.
And even the major, the higher-end cars now, they're exploring the non-gas market as well, producing electric cars like Mercedes-Benz.
I think
even Rolls-Royce is producing an electric model.
I have not seen Rolls Royce yet. Electric Rolls Royce.
Yeah, it's starting.
But people should.
Thank you so much, Peter, for calling in today. It was incredible listening to this idea and talking about cars. I happen to be. I love the idea of watching cars a lot. I watch a lot of cars. My father was a great car lover, and my brothers are into cars. And I caught the bug early in life, so I don't own a car. In fact, I gave my car away. But I am fascinated by cars. I really am. So it was a joy talking with you today and having you share what you know about electric cars. Thanks for calling in. And that brings us to the end of our program today. It's great just having an open forum for people to just call in and contribute something that would be meaningful to the rest of us. Now, here we have somebody just calling and talking about his Chevy Volt. And it caught me. It caught my attention. Or we have Moki from Connecticut talking about the hydraulic, not hydraulic, but the water run cars, the hybrid cars that are coming along, and the use of water as a fuel in splitting it between hydrogen and oxygen. Some of these things are developing, and some of these things are already at work. So we may see further developments in the not-too-distant future. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring good energy to you. And we'll see each other Monday, hopefully, in safe and sound condition. Bye-bye.
Traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer armação. Hoje é dia de sol, alegria de coió, é curtir o verão.
Vem, Magalenha Rojão, traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer armação. Hoje é dia de sol, alegria de coió, é curtir o verão.
Yeah, 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 yeah.